They kicked our ass. It's becoming the same story every single night. My message is, stop feeling sorry for yourself.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. Of course this podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, so make sure you're checking out all the podcasts across the network, especially the NBA shows where you can find the information about your specific team or the team of the guys on your fantasy team that you want to find out about right across the network. We are here to break down all 10 games from Wednesday and then preview a light four-game Thursday. So
let's get to it.
All right, we will in fact do that, Michael Bolton. We will start off by looking at the monstrous line of the night, and it goes to, of course,
LeBron James.
Yep. LeBron was great, 32, 11, and 9 in a close victory against the Kings. He had 5 triples, he had 3 steals, he had 2 blocks, he was 12 of 18 from the field. Yeah, 3 of 6 from the line is not ideal, but he has been much, much better from the free throw line this season as opposed to the 67% he shot last season. So he is your monstrous line of the night. He's averaging 28 points, 26 last year, 28, 8, and 8.6, 2 triples, 1.4 steals, 1.2 blocks, 59 from the field and 76 from the line for a true shooting of 67%, and is shooting an absolutely remarkable 43% from 3. Now, that number is sure to regress at some point, but he's clearly become a better 3-point shooter. I just don't imagine he is going to stick as the 43% shooter. He is the second-ranked player in fantasy leagues for this season. An absolute bargain where you're able to get him. Legitimately, I saw him go outside the first round in a couple of drafts, which was mind-boggling to me. I've got him in a couple of leagues. I'll just try and figure out exactly how many. There's one that I've got him in. Just one. I thought I had him in more than one league, but I'm pretty happy to have gotten him in that one league where I picked him up, and he has exceeded even my expectations, even though I was pretty high on him heading into, or at least higher than some others were heading into the season for LeBron. He's great. We know how good he is. I don't need to talk too much about LeBron. You know that he's good, but I would expect a regression in at least the 3-point percentage for LeBron as the season kicks on. The waiver wire line of the night. I was stunned to see that Danny Green is owned in only 43% of Yahoo leagues. You might say that he's owned in my league, Josh. He's not really a waiver wire guy, but you know, I have to have some sort of arbitrary cutoff. So for me, it's 50% ownership on Yahoo and he's at 43. So amazingly, he is still available in some leagues. He is the 88th ranked player so far this season. And yes, some of his value will dip a little bit when Kawhi Leonard returns, but it's not like he's going out there and playing 32 minutes a night. He's not going out there and getting 15 points a night. He's averaging 9.7 points. But it's because his defensive numbers have rebounded. 1.8 triples, 1.1 steals, 1.2 blocks. And that 1.2 blocks out of a shooting guard eligible player is a significant increase. He is also shooting much better. The last 2 years, he's been under 40% from the field. Now, he's only up to 41 this year, but that's a big jump, and he's at 37% from three. So he's not obliterating your field goal percentage. Not that, you know, the amount of attempts he was taking was really killing you, but the fact that that's a little bit better, it's helping his points, it's helping his threes, he's got the steals, he's got the blocks back, he's rebounding the ball better, which I think will dip a little bit when Kawhi returns. I think the rebounding will drop off there, but I think that, yeah, you know, it does depend on the structure of your team, but he should be owned in every league. Now, whether that's on your team or not remains to be seen. Imagine a little bit of a dip in his usage. He's at 16.7% this year, 13 last year, 14.5 the year before. So I would expect his usage to come back down, but usage has no impact on steals. It has no impact on blocks. It doesn't have any impact on minutes. So I think that we're going to get those threes. We're going to get the steals. We're going to get the blocks, and hopefully the efficiency can stay up from Dan Green. And that should keep him at least a top 120 player, but you know, a realistic expectation to be a top 100 guy. Maybe it's not a 50% outcome, but I think there's a fairly good chance that he can retain that level of production, especially with those defensive numbers. He's had two big defensive games in a row here. He had 12 points in this one, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, but it's the 2 triples, the 2 steals, and the 3 blocks. Almost had the Richie Beno, and he was 5 of 7 from the field. And he now has 6 blocks combined in his past 2 games, along with 5 threes. So obviously really helping you with those out-of-position stats there. The young gun of the night goes to Budrick Hield of the Sacramento Kings. Bud had 17 points with 2 triples, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals and a block on 7 of 13 shooting. He is a guy that, I'm not a massive fan of Bud as a player. I think he's a solid bench sixth man type of guy. I think that's what his role is in the NBA. I don't think he's got star written all over him, but I was stunned to see what his fantasy ranking is. Over the last 2 weeks, in only 21 minutes a night, he is the 73rd ranked player, which was astonishing to me. 13.5 points in 21 minutes is really good, but he's shooting 50% from the field in that time and 60% from three. So he's giving you 2.5 threes in just 21 minutes, which is obviously ridiculous. But the other thing that he has done this season, he has upped his steal rate. He is at 1.2 steals, but that's only in 22.5 minutes. Last year, he was at 0.8 steals in 25 minutes. So to put those on equal pegging, if we look at per 36, he's gone from 0.7 steals to 1.9 steals. That is a huge, huge jump in his steal rate this season, and it has made him, on a per 36 basis, the 36th ranked player in fantasy, and over the last month, the 16th ranked player. So if for some reason the Kings decide to play him more minutes and play him 30 minutes a night, then he is going to have more value. Now, I don't expect him to continue to shoot at 60% from three. Nobody does. But he's at 40%, 45% on the season, and I think expecting him to be an above 40% shooter from three is a realistic expectation, and that can have some value. It's all about whether really he can keep those steals up, the increased rebounding rate, can he maintain that as well, and can he keep shooting at an efficient rate? So there is some value there in Budrick, mainly for his threes, but also the efficiency is really good, and if that steal rate continues, there's something there. So he is a guy that could be on your waiver wire. I'm not saying that he's a must-own guy. He's a guy that you can add and see how it goes, but these have been some performances that honestly, the ranking and the performance of him actually really did surprise me, and a lot of it comes from the high threes, the high steals, and the solid percentages in both of those categories. Even though they're not game changers, the fact that he's giving you 2.5 threes while actually being a positive contributor in field goal percentage is huge, and if your league's counting three-point percentage, then his value skyrockets. We're talking about probably a top 40 or maybe top 50 guy. I don't have those numbers in. Actually, I can look that up to see what it looks like in a 3-point percentage league. I should have a look to see where he is in the Red Rock Listener League rankings, which includes 3-point percentage, because I imagine he'll be quite a bit high. Yeah, he's the 71st ranked player in that sort of a league format, putting together some nice numbers. So Budrick Hield is your young gun of the night with a nice extended run of some solid shooting that we're seeing from Bud. The dud of the night, I tell a man's not hot. It was Dwayne Wade. He wasn't Wade's best game. 4 points, 3 rebounds, and 6 assists. And mainly he was right down the bottom there because of the shooting. 1 of 5 from the field and 2 of 6 from the line, which was atrocious. Those assist numbers are still tasty. And over the last 2 weeks, he is still a top 100 guy, averaging 15, 3, and 3.7 with a steal and with 1.1 block. And you'd be shocked, he's at 0.9 threes. So he has improved his 3-point shooting 46% over the last 2 weeks, just 35% for the season. Very low volume, only 1.2 attempts per game. But recently he has upped that, 2 attempts per game over his last 7 games. He's hitting them at a higher rate, and he's doing stuff with the assists, playing a lot of point guard, getting the steals. The shot blocking has been really good, and he does have a place on 12-team rosters. It doesn't have to be yours, much like Bud or much like Dan Green. He's not a must-own type of guy, but if he's on the waiver wire, you should consider, hey, is my worst player worse than Wade? If so, sure, go and add him, see how it goes. Isaiah Thomas' return, and to a lesser degree, Tristan Thompson's return, will have a deleterious impact on Wade, especially Thomas. But for now, the numbers are pretty good. He's 103rd over the last month. You can use that. You can use 4 assists and a steal and a block per game with 13 points. That's very usable. So have a look if he's around. It was just a real turd from him against Sacramento, and I wouldn't be using that as an excuse to drop him if I did own him. But yeah, I think once we head into January, some of those reasons to drop might become a little bit louder when Isaiah Thomas returns, at least. All right, we're going to now get into all 10 of these games, break them down in more detail, and then we'll be back later on to preview the how many games? The four games, that's it. The 4 games we have got for Thursday. We'll be back to look at that after we go through all 10 of these games for Wednesday's action. All right, let's take a look at these games. Now, the first one we want to take a look at is the Atlanta Hawks and the Orlando Magic. This game went to overtime. The Magic pull out the victory. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince I talked about the other day that I thought he was due to have a bit of a bounce back. He'd been struggling, and I do believe that he is a must-own guy. He bounced back. Now, 75% shooting is not realistic, but 19-6 with three triples is really nice, and he should be owned. Dennis Schroeder, just one of many German players to have big nights. There's four German players in the NBA, and all four of them had really strong nights on Wednesday. Schroeder, 26-5-7 with two steals, continues to do pretty much exactly what you wanted him to do when you drafted him. Ersan Ilyasova made another start, 28 minutes for him, 9-7 with a steal and two blocks, but he's not really providing 12-team value in the absence of the Baptist and the Undertaker and Mike Muscala. So I think he's fine to own on certain situations, but not a must-own guy. But I think the surprise would be Tyler Cavanagh, who started the second half for Miles Plumlee, played 30 minutes, and that's three consecutive games for Tyler with over 20 minutes played, 13-6, two triples and a steal. He's been shooting the three ball pretty well for all of the season. And he's an interesting guy. He's a two-way contract player, so he's only got 45 days. And we'll speak about Mike James and the two-way contract a little bit later when we do the DFS preview of the Suns. So if you want to hear about that, stay tuned for the DFS portion. So he's not going to have massive. This is Cavanagh. Not going to have massive season-long type value. But for now, while all these big men are out, he's putting up some decent type performances. So someone to pay attention to. Plumlee had 8-4 in 13 minutes, but he did leave the court at one point, but was able to return. The other guy I'm really interested in on this team is DeAndre Bembry. 27 minutes for Bembo, 8-5-3 with two steals. The minutes are up. They're pushing up every game. He's starting to cut into playing time of guys like Isaiah Taylor. Yeah, lost a few minutes here. Marco Bellinelli, he's losing some playing time. Bazemore still played his 36 minutes. I think Bembry's a better player than Bazemore. I think Bembry's a better player than Bellinelli, or at least will become one. So he is a name, probably not a 12-team add at this point, but he's a guy to really pay some attention to. And in 14-team leagues, I'd add him. And if I've got a little bit of leeway, I would look in 12, because you look at his game log and just look at the minutes continuing to rise. And I'm really interested in what he's going to be able to provide. Apparently owned in 1% of leagues. So he's around. 16-team leagues, he's around. I'd add him in those, no doubt. Onto the Magic. Evan Fournier suffered a sprained ankle in overtime. We'll see exactly how that pans out. X-rays were negative, so no breaks, but I would imagine he is going to miss some time. He was good in this game, 27 points on just 21 shots. He was 2 of 3 from 3, but with him likely to miss some time, Terry Ross already out, those wing minutes are going to be very interesting. I would expect John Simmons to play a ton. He played 41 here and had 15-6 with the triple one, so if he's still around, add him. The other guys, I think Aaron Aflalo will likely get the start. You'll see some minutes for Wezewundo, maybe some Mario Hezonja. And when John Isaac finally returns, maybe he will be forced into minutes at the three. Now, people seem to think that he would be playing 25 minutes at the three. And that's just not the case. He's not a three. And I get this question a lot, because I believe he's listed as a small forward on maybe ESPN and Yahoo. He is not a three. He is a power forward, and he will be a center. He's 6'11". He is not a three. He's played 4% of his minutes so far at small forward this year, 96% at power forward. So he hasn't been playing at the three. But they might not have any option but to go with an Isaac, Gordon, Vucevic front court. That's not what they want to do for the future. I am convinced of that. But they might be forced into it with this Fournier injury. And we know that Isaac has got a great fantasy profile. High rebounder, good steals, good blocks, can hit triples. By no means is he a must-own 12-team league guy, but he could be forced into some extra minutes. They also could run some Peyton, DJ Augustine backcourts, which is something I think they'd probably look into before giving bulk minutes to Hezonja, who didn't play a single second in this one. As for Lord Alfred, 40 minutes, 6-5-6 with two steals and a block. Wasn't a good shooting night for him, but otherwise the other numbers are pretty solid. While Aaron Gordon missed all four of his three-point attempts, that three-point percentage, which I talked about a few days ago, is already starting to regress. He is just barely above 40 now, but a good night nonetheless. 24-15 with two assists and a block on 60% from the field, and he has been an absolute star. I've got to talk about Vooch, because he had 22-16, four assists, two steals, four blocks, and two triples, and narrowly missed out on being the monstrous line of the night. The Sacramento Kings and the Cleveland Cavaliers. There's a lot to unpack with the Kings. I feel like I go on a Kings rant all the time. Maybe I'll ease up on them today, but The fact that Willie Cauley-Stein is out and Scalabissier was sent down to the G League is a joke. And then the fact that Georgios Papagiannis was called up and Dave Yeager's response to that was, oh, he's called up, but I don't think he'll play. Calling him up was an organizational decision, and I'm a team guy and I'm just going to go small. What does that mean? I'm a team guy. Surely the organization is the team. And you can say whatever you want. Papagiannis is not ready for minutes, and that's a totally understandable thing to say. He hasn't looked good in his time. But Jakar Sampson, I'll talk about him in a sec. But the fact that your front office and your coach can't even be anywhere close to on the same page, or your coach can't even pretend to be on the same page as your front office, is a massive issue. It's ridiculous. And I would have to think that the front office is thinking to themselves, you know, why is Jaeger doing these things? And I thought that, yeah, maybe they're just dumb and in on it as well, but maybe they're not. Maybe they're just completely at odds with each other. And Jaeger's gone, well, you know, I've got this extension now. You're not going to fire me. I'm doing what I want, which is just an absolute crazy situation to be in. And the fact that there are so many teams, or, you know, over the course of history, been so many teams where front offices and coaches just aren't on the same wavelength is unbelievable organizational dysfunction. It makes no sense at all. So in saying that, without Cauley Stein, with Le Bissiere in the G League, with Papagiannis called up but not playing, they started Jakar Sampson at center. He played 33 minutes and had 16 rebounds. What the hell? This is a guy whose career averaged 4.8 rebounds per 36 minutes and then came out in 33 and pulled down 16. So to say it's an outlier is an understatement. To be fair, Sampson played most of those minutes as a small forward in Philadelphia because he's not a center. So he might see a slight bump in the next game that Cauley Stein is out. But again, he's another two-way guy that is just, he's just not very good. And he's not going to do anything for the future of any team. I don't really understand the point of any of this for the Kings. It just doesn't make any sense. But that was a nice effort to pull down those 16 boards. As for Zach Randolph, the future of the team, 18, 10, and 6 with 3 steals in 32 minutes. The numbers are fine for Randolph. It is just not conducive to good basketball. 20 shots he takes. He's an offensive black hole. He's a true shooting of 45 with a usage of 29, reminiscent of what he did last season for Memphis. And you can say whatever you want. He gets buckets. He's a pro. He's a veteran. It's bullshit. It's just ludicrous decision after ludicrous decision on this team. Georgie Hill got back to 30 minutes, 10, 5, and 3 with 2 blocks and 2 triples. That's a nice night from Hill. He's just a borderline 12 guy to me. While De'Aaron Fox, 29 minutes, but just is not putting up numbers. 6, 1, and 2, and I don't think that he's really a 12-team league guy. While Frank Mason, again, impressed. 15, 2, and 2 with 3 steals in only 19 minutes. He's going to get minutes every night. Will he be a 12-team league at some point? Maybe. But I wouldn't be adding him. He's more of a 16-teamer at this stage. Bogdan Bogdanovic only played 18 minutes. Garrett Temple only played 19 minutes, which is something that I can get behind. There's no need for him to play big minutes. Well, Vince Carter, he saw 19 minutes because, again, got to give Vince the minutes because common sense just doesn't really always fit with this team. Just so much weirdness going on. On to the Cavs. Love had 18 and 13 in 30 minutes. Pretty unsurprising against the Kings. Kyle Korver nailed his 4 triples. He's a guy that, you know, if he showed up on a 12-team league roster because he said, you know what, I really need 3s and he gives me 2.5 a game, it makes sense. Not a must own, not necessarily a should own, but he's doing it consistently. When these other guys return, Rose, Shumpert, Thompson, Thomas, you know, he's going to have his minutes reduced significantly, as will Jeff Green. Who will almost certainly see some of that playing time dip. But he had another nice night, 17 points and just 8 shots. Of course, that sort of efficiency won't stick. Jay Crowder, just one of the biggest disappointments in the NBA this season, especially in fantasy. I hope none of you took him at pick 60 or pick 65, whatever his ADP was. That was always bananas at the time, and it looks even worse now. The plumber, J.R. Smith, had 6 points with 2 triples in his 34 minutes. The next game, the Chicago Bulls and the Indiana Pacers. The Bulls built up a lead, choked it away, get themselves the loss. The Hammer, Denzel Valentine, 15, 8, and 3 with 4 triples in 33 minutes. I said this before, that when David Nwaba came back in that first game, people were like, oh, that's it, let's just drop the Hammer. Yeah, maybe not. It's 30 minutes and then 33 in 2 consecutive games. I would still be owning him in 12-10 leagues to see where it pans out. Wasn't the greatest Justin Holiday night, and I do believe that the Hammer is better than Holiday. 7 and 4 in 36 minutes for Justin, but they both should be 12-team league guys, whereas Chris Dunn's a must-own. 18, 6 and 6 with a triple one. 57% from the field is obviously impressive. He just continues to do weird things, though, on the court, and I'm still not convinced he's ever going to be a good player, but he is putting up numbers on this team. He's going to have a role. Still no Nico Mirotic. He'll be back on Friday, so Punchbob Shiploke played 19 minutes, 12 and 7 for Portis, but leave him as a 16-teamer. While Lauri Markkanen, he's not going to lose the starting job to Mirotic, but what we could see is Hoiberg reduce him from 32 minutes a night down to 29 minutes a night, and then at some point he may become, yeah, a guy that you don't want to own. At this point, we're not there. He is clearly a guy to own. 11 and 6 on a poor shooting night in 31 minutes, while Nwaba played his 22 minutes and had 11 and 3. And he's a strong, deeper league guy. Amazingly, he is owned in 4% of leagues. Bembry's owned in 1. I would have Bembry over him pretty comfortably. But Nwaba is a deeper league player that can have some value. Onto the Pacers, Victor Oladipo's crazy season continues. 27-8-2, 4 triples and 3 steals. While Miles Turner, a nice game. You get the 6 bonus assists from him. 11-7 with 4 blocks. Still not doing exactly what we would have hoped offensively. But the 4 blocks are nice. Yeah, it's a strong game. Bojan Bogdanovic did his thing. He's as streaky as they come. Stream him, and that's probably about it. While Daz Collison struggled quite a bit, 14 points in 21 minutes, while Corey Joseph had 31 minutes, but he doesn't do enough. Corey Joseph, he is a deep league guy only, and even if he started Corey Joseph, he would not be a 12-team must-own. Thaddeus Young had 10-9. Well, Domantas Sabonis, I'm ready to say it. If you still own him in 12s, I reckon you can move on. 6-5 in 21 for Domantas. Let's move on to the next game. The Dallas Mavericks and the Boston Celtics. Maxi Kleber, another German man who put up a big, big performance. 29 minutes for Maxi, 13-5 with 5 blocks, a steal and a 3. He's been gradually increasing his minutes, but this 5 blocks is completely out of nowhere. He did have some pretty decent defensive translations coming out of Europe, and that made me grab him in one of the, or maybe two of the Red Rock 30 team leagues. And yeah, maybe down the future when Dirk retires, he can move into a steady role. But he's been okay. But he's not a guy that I'm looking at this and going, you know what? Shit, 13-5 with 5 blocks. Let's add him. I would add him in 18-team leagues. I would probably add him in 16-team leagues. But when Seth Curry returns, I would imagine the pencil Harrison Barnes gets pushed back up to the 4. And that pushes Kleber back out of the lineup. As for the pencil, he had 19-7, while Yogi Ferrell played 34 minutes and had 8-7. He is literally just a deeper league guy, even with Curry out. Den Smith, only 25 minutes, was dealing with a sore groin, shot terribly, but still had 12-6 with 2 steals. The groin is not something to be too concerned about long term, but it was still a relatively productive night, but we just know that the field goal percentage for him is going to be a concern, as it is for nearly all rookies. Whereas the other German, Dirk, 16-6 in 28 minutes, that's 12-teamable. I'd consider him a guy that you don't know. He'd probably be your 12th best guy or 13th best guy, but he probably should be owned in most leagues. On to the Celtics. They were without Jaylen Brown, who was dealing with an eye issue thanks to his contact lenses, and Marcus Morris was out with a knee problem. So the Celtics just ran everyone in their rotation. Basically, we saw Marcus Smart start and be terrible. 34 minutes for Smart, 2 points, did add the 4 assists. I'm still an advocate of him in a few punt field goal percentage league. I would still own him in 12-team leagues in that situation. But this was not a good Marcus Smart night. With Morris out, we had Bainesy start, only played 10 minutes because Vanilla Tice, the other German in the NBA, put up another big night. 7-11 in 17 minutes. And that's not that big, but in 17 minutes, it is. And he had 2 steals and he had a block. And he's shown some pretty good flashes this season. Of course, he's just a deeper league guy, because when Morris and Brown return, he goes back to playing, 11 minutes or so. Jason Tatum, 3-point percentage check. Makes me look dumb every time. 2 out of 3 for 67%, 17-10. He is just really, really good, and he's a must-own guy. And Kyrie and Al Horford were strong. Horford almost went for the Chris Gayle, which is a new term that I'm looking to bring in. It's the 3 threes, 3 steals, and 3 blocks. Or I'm debating whether I call it the Gooch. Not after the area of skin between your bum and your balls, but more between the name of the former English cricketer who once scored 333. And Chris Gayle's cricket number was also 333. So I'm debating whether we call it the Gayle or we call it the Gooch. Regardless, Horford didn't quite get there. He had 3 threes, he had 2 steals, and he had 3 blocks. So almost got us the Gooch, almost got us the Gale. But a really fantastic line from Horford. Overall, that was a lot of explanation for something that didn't actually come true. We saw the dancing bear Gershon Yabesele. We saw 28 minutes of Terry Rozier, who shot poorly. And we can talk as much as we want about Marcus Smart being a poor shooter. Rozier is as bad, if not worse, majority of the time. Maybe not this season, but in his career, he has been. We saw extended Shane Larkin minutes. We saw Abdul Nadir out there, and 25 minutes of Semi Ojeleye, and he managed to put up 3 rebounds only. Fair to say that the rotation or the minutes for these guys just won't be the same when Brown and Morris return, which will likely be in the next contest. The Memphis Grizzlies and the New York Knicks. Marc Gasol gave everyone a scare, left the court with a knee problem in the first half, returned in the second half, so all is good. 17-8-3 with 2 blocks there for him. Chandler Parsons returned, looked good. 13-3 with 3 triples. And I think most games this season we could say Chandler Parsons looks pretty good. It's only a matter of time, I feel, before he does become a standard league guy. It's probably going to be mid to late January. He needs the 28 minutes a night, but 13 points in 22 minutes is a decent return. He's hitting his shots better. He just looks more comfortable. It's just a matter of getting those minutes back up. Mario Chalmers saw his minutes return, 14 points with 2 assists and 2 steals, and that's because Benny McLemore barely played because he's been atrocious. Just 8 minutes for McLemore, and Dylan Brooks only played 18. So he saw more Chalmers, more Andy Harrison. I'm not sure if that's going to stick, especially 29 minutes for Andy Harrison, but he did play well. He had 5 assists and 2 steals, but really, these are deeper league sort of guys. Only Tyreek did his thing. Only 1 assist, which was weird, but 15 points and then lots of other ones, and not a good shooting night from Tyreek. Of course, we're not too worried about his value. On to the Knicks, no Timmy Hardaway, so Courtney Lee shifted over to the 2, and Lance Thomas started. Thomas played 32 minutes, had 8-4. He is not a fantasy option outside of 20-team leagues. That meant that Damian Dotson, who did pretty well in the last game, moved back to the bench and played only 5 minutes, and there was talk from Hornacek that he's going to rotate those guys, or depending on matchups or whatever bullshit he comes up with, between Dotson, between McDirt, and between Lance Thomas. Porzingis returned, which is probably the biggest news to come out of this for the Knicks.
Porzingis.
He had 18-5 with 2 threes, a steal, and a block. Inefficient, but some good numbers nonetheless. So Mick Beasley moved back to the bench and shot well and had 14-4, but still just a deeper league guy. I've got to talk about Courtney Lee because he is a clear must-own. 24 points with 4 triples and 3 assists for Lee. Been a real surprise packet. While Jarrett Jack double-doubled, he had 10-6-10. In his 27 minutes, and Frankie Ntilikina just contributing the 3 steals, which is what you need from him, but I don't really see him becoming a 12-team league. I thought in December he'd start. We still got three quarters of the month to go, but I'm not sure that he is a real high upside 12-team league guy. The Detroit Pistons and the Milwaukee Bucks. Stan went back to his old starting lineup, put Stan Johnson back in there, 34 minutes for him, just the 2 points, missed all 8 of his shots, but had 7 rebounds, 5 assists and a steal, but of course, he's just a deeper league sort of guy. 30 plus minutes for Reggie Jackson for the second consecutive game, 14-5-4, and of course, that means Ish Smith played limited minutes. Jackson has been a huge, huge surprise, and for the Avery Bradley Panickers, this is what we hoped to see a bit more of. 33 minutes, 20 points on bad shooting, 39% shooting. 3 threes, 2 assists, 1 steal. I talked about it. The rebounds won't be there, but he was going to be better than what he was. Andre Drummond was fantastic. 27-20-6, while Toby Harris had 21-5 with 3 steals. Both those guys continue their fantastic seasons. On to the Bucks, Jason Kidd. I don't know what to say about this guy. I get into arguments with people all the time. He's not a good coach. People think he's a good coach. It's pretty amazing to me. The people think, I got into an argument with one bloke today who says that he's a better coach than Mike D'Antoni, which just made my brain fall out completely. He is not a good coach. Yeah, they got the victory. I don't care. It's not necessarily about results. Mark Jackson got the Warriors into the playoffs. Bad coach. Doesn't matter. Kidd just makes baffling tactical decisions, lineup decisions all the time. So, Jason Terry's out. First guard off the bench. Rashard Vaughn, who just didn't play in November, didn't play at all. And then he comes in, and to be fair, Vaughn played all right, 11-5-2 with 2 triples, but it's just a baffling decision. Brogdon, limited to 26 minutes. He played all right as well, 10-5-4. I just don't understand the mentality. 24 minutes for Liggins, 2-4-1 and 2 steals. And Kidd, at the end of the game, the logic that comes out of this guy half the time, it makes no sense. Nothing this guy says makes sense when he says it. But at the end of the game, as the Pistons were trying to come back, Kidd started fouling them, intentionally fouling them. And his reason was, they were just going down there and shooting quick twos. So I thought I would make it even quicker for them by putting them to the line so that we could get the ball back. Mate, you're leading. So what you're going to do is, and he thinks, and then his reasoning was, if they miss one, then that helps us. Yep. Okay. So free throws are on average hit at 80% of the time. In general, 80% of the time, that's fine. He's using the logic that every time they go for a quick two, they were going to hit every single one of them. So then if someone misses a free throw, it ends up as a net benefit to his team. But people don't hit 100% of their twos. They hit 50% of their twos. So the logic of a team trying to come back, of you fouling a team trying to come back to put them on the line because they were taking quick twos and you said, let's just get it over with quicker, is astounding. It is astoundingly stupid, and they still win in spite of this guy. He is a horrendous coach. He is, and you can tell me that results are fine, whatever, I don't care. He is a horrendous coach, and the stuff he says makes zero sense. Horrendous. The Muppet John Henson had 10-6 with 2 blocks, while Thon McCur played 23 minutes and didn't do a huge amount. Henson's still a guy to own, while Yanni and Chrissy Middleton put up some big numbers. Once again, they're really thriving. Well, Bledsoe had 22, 5, and 3. Another strong night from Bledsoe, although the free throws weren't ideal, but I'm not overly concerned there. Tone Snell only played the 20 minutes because we needed to make sure we got lots of DeAndre Liggins and Rashad Vaughn. And as much of a critic I am of Snell, he's better than Liggins and Vaughn. I think we're all pretty much aware of that. Kid, man, the worst. Denver. Well, he's not the worst. He's pretty close. Denver and New Orleans, the Nuggets made a change to their starting line because when you're going to go up against Boogie, the best idea is to go and put someone who's a really small, undersized center against him. Clearly, they moved Ken Fareed to center. They put Fart and Will Barton in at small forward and moved Wilson Chandler across to the four. Not surprisingly, Boogie went absolutely bananas. He had 40 and 22. Fareed only played 24 minutes and had 6 and 5 with 2 blocks, while Mason Plumlee played 23 minutes off the bench. And I'm not saying Mason Plumlee is a good defender, but I'm definitely saying that Kenneth Fareed isn't a good defender. And he's smaller, and I just don't understand that. If you're going to go small, that's fine. But doing it against Boogie, is that really what you want to do? Apparently so. The Blue Arrow only played 23 minutes because Emmanuel Mudiay got hot early. Murray was still fine, 15-1 and 4 with 2 steals and a block, and ended up being more efficient than what Mudiay was. This is Mudiay's first good game in a while, 17-2 and 3 in 27 minutes. Leave him alone. Just, again, Malone, some baffling coaching moves. Gaz Harris, really good.
Nice, Gary!
24-3 and 4, 2 steals and 3 triples. He's really carrying an offensive load with the Nikola Jokic out, while Fart and Will Barton had 15 and 7 with 3 triples. Juancho Hernangómez saw his minutes dropped right down, and Malik Beasley took those ones. We're talking about deeper league stuff there. I think Juancho's still a nice dynasty target, while Baby Neck Wilson Chandler, 8 and 4 in 24 minutes. I don't care that Millsap and Jokic are out. He is not a 12-team league guy. On to the Pelicans. Boog, 40 and 22 with 4 blocks, 4 assists, and 2 triples. Big night from him, and Drew Holiday continues to be really good. 27 with 7 assists, a strong night from him on 60% shooting. Weirdly, he hasn't been able to shoot as well when he plays with both Davis and Cousins, but he's really excelling now and has been amazing. Rondo gets the offensive game going a little bit more with Davis out, 11, 6, and 7. I would expect him to go back to like an 8-point sort of level when Davis returns, but he's putting together some decent enough numbers, but still only playing 26 minutes a night. Dante Cunningham started for Davis, had a triple one, deep leagues only, while Etuan Moore, the good shooting continues, 14 points on 50% and 4 triples for Moore. He's a points and threes type streamer that when Davis returns, that value will drop off quite a bit. And good to see Omar Asik's corpse be exhumed for another 8 minutes here. Always important to see that. The Golden State Warriors and the Charlotte Hornets. No Steph, of course, he's out for a couple of weeks. Draymond Green was out of this one with shoulder soreness, and Pat McCaw out with concussion, and then Zaza Pachulia lasted 5 minutes before his shoulder started giving him issues. With McCaw out, they started Quinn Cook, a G League call-up, on a two-way call-up, 22 minutes for Cookie, 8-3-3 with 2 triples. With McCaw back, hopefully for the next game, I imagine that he will start, and I don't think much is going to change with Shawnee Livingston's minutes. He played 16 minutes here and had 4 points and 1 steal. This is what I was trying to communicate the other day about Livingston's value. I think the McCaw is going to have some of that value. Iguodala played 30 minutes, had 8 and 8 with 3 steals and 2 blocks. Only the 1 assist, but some good defensive numbers. If you want to add him in 12s, fine. I just think his upside's a little bit limited. While Clay and Durant are really going to step up with Steph out. 35, 11 and 10 for KD, 22, 4 and 3 for Clay. And without Draymond, Jordan Bell started, played 20 minutes and went scoreless. He had 5 points, sorry, he had 5 rebounds, he had 4 assists and 3 blocks. So getting it done in those other categories, but no scoring, missed both his field goal attempts. This was an opportunity for him to, you know, put up some good numbers. I don't think he's a 12-team league guy, as I've said numerous times, even with injuries to Zaza Pachulia, with injuries to Steph Curry, or his regular spot in the rotation. He's just not going to see 25 minutes a night. I can 100%, maybe let's go, I can 99% assure you he will not play 25 minutes a night this season. Zaza is unlikely to play in the next game, and that's going to mean JaVale McGee starts at center, and you're still going to get 13, 14 minutes out of Bell, because Dave West will play, Kevon Looney will play, McGee will be in the rotation, so it's not like this huge opportunity for him to come out there and put up all these big numbers. On to the Hornets. Nick Batum, 15, 5, and 4 with 2 steals and 2 triples. People just hate Nick Batum in fantasy. Oh, I need to drop him. No, like that's pretty fine. That's good. Kemba had 24, 6, and 5, while Dwight had 14 and 7. Cody Zeller hurt his knee, wasn't able to return, 6 and 8. Frank Kaminsky hurt his ankle, wasn't able to return. So if both of those guys are out, we're going to have to see Johnny O'Brien play a Jason Kidd special, and then we're going to have to see some Trevion Graham, who played 13 minutes in this one. That's something for your 30-teamers or your 20-teamers to go and add an O'Brien or a Graham. We don't know how long Zeller or Kaminsky will be out, if they're out at all. Marv Williams continues to struggle, 7-5 in 29 minutes. He's a 14-teamer, while Kidd Gilchrist, 6-3 in 25. I don't believe that Kidd Gilchrist is a must-own 12-team league guy. He has struggled a lot this season. I still believe he can improve on what he's done. I just don't think that he is a must-own guy. I think I've been pretty consistent with saying that. The Miami Heat and the San Antonio Spurs. Joshy Richardson, another offensive game. 19 points with 3 triples, 2 assists. No defensive numbers, but the shooting was always going to start to come around, and he shot 70% here, and he should be owned. Make sure he is. Deion Waiters had 22 with 5 assists. He's a guy that's an ownable player as well, but does struggle in overall fantasy value. While Kelly Olynyk started 33 minutes, 5-8-4 with 3 steals and a block. He is the clear must-own player with Hassan Whiteside out, not Bam Adebayo. They also started Jimmy Johnson. Didn't quite make us proud, so he doesn't get the song today. 24 minutes for Jim, 9-3-6, but he was in some foul trouble and those assist numbers were fine. So that moved Justice Winslow to the bench and it moved Adebayo to the bench, and neither of those guys did anything, even though they played a similar amount of minutes to what they normally do. Now, Tyler Johnson had a big game. I sort of felt that he was going to. I think I talked about that on the DFS portion yesterday. 25-3-2 with 5 triples in 30 minutes on 75% shooting, but I just don't rely. I don't think we can rely upon either minutes or definitely not that sort of efficiency, and that makes him more a 14-team league player. On the Spurs, Rudy Gay made another start. 33 minutes, 16-7 with 3 steals. Definitely, while Kawhi is out, he's worth owning, but Kawhi looks like he could be back on Friday. If you want to go take a flyer on Gay, by all means do it. He had been playing like 19, 20 minutes a game before the Anderson injury, so this big increase is a surprise, and I don't think he's going to be able to maintain this level of production, but it's something to pay attention to. Pre-game, Greg Popovich compared Bryn Forbes to Steph Curry, and he then went out and had 17 points in 28 minutes with 5 triples. But when Kawhi's back, he's just not going to see that level of playing time. Pau Gasol didn't play in the second half, 12-5 for him. This is a really rough stretch in terms of games for the Spurs, so that's why they limited him. While Pat Mills hit his 3 threes for 13 points, had 6 assists as well. And putting together some decent numbers, but really more of a deeper league guy. Manu also banged his knee, but he thinks he will be fine, which is good news for Manu fans. The last game of the night was the Minnesota Timberwolves and the LA Clippers on the road. The Timberwolves get the victory, but not without playing everyone a shit ton of minutes. Jimmy Butler has played 40 minutes in 4 consecutive games. He played 43 here. It's great for us for fantasy for the time being, where he had 19, 8, and 8. But when something goes wrong, it's not going to be good. And go and listen to the Ringers NBA podcast. Listen to Kevin O'Connor talk about Thibodeau. He's even more aggressive than I am. He says he should be fired immediately. I said if someone gets injured, he should be fired. He said he should be fired immediately, which is pretty strong words, but he echoes pretty much everything I've been saying about Thibodeau. Townsie looked bleak for him in the first quarter, but got some extra shots in the second half. 21-12, 4 assists, 2 steals, and 4 blocks. Those defensive numbers are a real surprise for Townsie. Good to get them. While Taj Gibson, 36 minutes, 16-14, and 3 blocks. He's a must-own guy, as weird as it is. Gorgie Dieng, 20 minutes, 8-4. Still playing this 8-man rotation. I just get the feeling this is just who Wiggins is. It's his fourth season. Nothing changes. 16-2-2, inefficient. Doesn't get steals or blocks, doesn't rebound. This is just who he is. And I think we just got to come to that realization that he's not going to be a top 50 fantasy guy or really ever push into the top 30. I just don't think that he's ever going to be that guy. Jeff Teague had 19-3-7, so a pretty strong game from him. Still wish that Towns and Butler were getting more of the shots. So Wiggins had 16, Townsie had 14, Teague had 14, Butler had 12, Gibson had 10, and Crawford had 10. You know, I want to see 18 for Towns, 18 for Butler. And you know, Gibson can have 8 and T can have 10 and Crawford can do whatever he needs to do and Wiggins can have 12. It's still a weird distribution. On to the Clippers. The Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, was back. 26 minutes, started, shot horribly, 2 of 13. That won't continue. You don't have to be too worried about that being something that is going to continue for the Rooster. The fact that he's starting and back, if he was dropped, you add him and you add him immediately. Don't think too much about it. That moved Jameel Wilson back to the bench, obviously cut off any value that Montrezl Harrell may have had or Sammy Decker. DeAndre Jordan, 18 and 21. This was always a good matchup for him, and he made the most of it. While Lou Williams had 23, 3 and 8. And Austin Rivers, 23, 2 and 4. Rivers is a must-own. He is playing exceptionally well at the moment. The efficiency is way up. He's scoring a lot. The usage is fine, and it will be at least until Blake returns. Wes Johnson, 32 minutes. Only 9 points for Wes, but had the 3 blocks, and he's going to be a solid source of defensive numbers, at least again, until Griffin returns. And he will continue to start and play 30 minutes. Oh, I don't have too much of a concern there. CJ Williams started once again, no. He played 11 minutes. So he's like he's doing the Bogans there and starting and just not seeing any minutes as the game continues. That does it for all of Wednesday's 10-game action. I'm going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about a 4-game Thursday in the NBA as we look ahead to DFS action. But before we do that, I'm going to give you a song. I'm just trying to pick which song it's going to be. It's going to be This Is How It Should Be. No, we won't do that one. I was going to put that one on. We'll do another one. I think we're going to do After Dark by Big School, and then I'll be back to look at some DFS. Let's talk DFS action. But we'll start with the perfect lineups from Wednesday. On FanDuel, Jarrett Jack, 30.2. Tyler Johnson, 33.6. Budrick Hield, 35.3. And Dan Green, 33.6. LeBronald had 66.7. Durant had 66.2. Zach Randolph, 48. Maxi Kleber had 37.5. And Boog had 78.4 for a total of 429.5. And that cost $59,900. On DraftKings, Jack had 33, Hield 34, Durant 72.25, Randolph 48, Cousins 81, Tyler Johnson 35.75, Kleber 32.75, and Vooch had 61.5 for a total of 398.25, and that cost $50,000. Let's talk about the four games we've got coming up for Thursday. We'll start with the Los Angeles Lakers and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers are favored by 7.5, and the total is 221, so the largest total of the day. The Sixers have got a couple of blokes who are questionable. Timothy John McConnell with that shoulder contusion that's caused him to miss the last couple, or Dario Saric has an eye abrasion. If both of those guys miss, there's a real opportunity for someone to jump up, like Timotei Luwawu-Cabarro, for Jared Bayless as a GPP option, but there's going to be some minutes available. Maybe Furkan Korkmaz jumps up, because they just don't have many players who can fill those roles. With Fultz already out, and there's, I don't want to talk too much about that situation, because just no update again from the Sixers. They are the absolute worst in terms of PR handling of injuries. Just an absolute shit show. This Colangelo administration with handling the PR from injuries, just disgraceful. Like, just really, really horrendous. But let's talk about who's actually here and ready to go. At point guard, Lonzo is at 6,600, and he hasn't really been returning that level of value, but he can clearly do it, and that makes him a guy to have in your GPP pools a lot of the time, but he's not going to be a guy that's a cash guy. onto the other point guards, it's only Jared Bayless. He's at 3,600. If McConnell and Šarić are out, I would consider using Bayless because they're going to have to give him big minutes. Otherwise, I think that it's hard to consider him. At shooting guard, I like Jordy Clarkson at 4,500. Just terrible in the last game with just 3.7 points. But prior to that, he'd smashed through value in the majority of his game. So I'd be happy with getting back to him. Caldwell Pope at 5,800 is too high for cash. And I don't really see a huge, huge GPP upside. So you could use him, but I wouldn't feel good about it. While JJ Redick at 5,700, I'd feel much safer using Redick in cash than I would using Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Luau Cabarro, as I mentioned, at minimum salary, if we have those two guys out, he would definitely be a guy to look at. I like Brandon Ingram at 6,800, playing much better lately. 37 average over the last three, 33 over the last five, which at 6,800... perfectly fine. Happy with that. While Bob Cove at 6,700, he's been a little bit up and down with his numbers. I'd probably look at him more of a tournament guy rather than a cash sort of a player. At power forward, Julius Randle is at 4,700 because he only played 16 minutes in the last game. I would look at as a GPP, but I cannot trust the rotation for him with cash. Benny Simmons at 10.5. I'm in on that and cash. I think that he's pretty much going to get you 50 most nights. While Amir Johnson at 36, yeah, probably not. Then you got the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, at 5,400. Massive game from him in the last one, but prior to that, the other games hadn't been that great. 5,400 is not a high price to pay, so I would consider it, but I wouldn't want to lock him in, while Larry Nance at 6,000 is way too expensive. I know Nance had 34 in that last game. 6,000 is too expensive for Larry Nance, while Šarić at 6,400. If McConnell's out and Šarić is in, I would consider using him for cash. At center, Embiid, 10.8. We remember the last time he played the Lakers, he destroyed them. 10,800 for Embiid. I think it's more of a GPP play than a cash play, but it wouldn't be a horrible cash option. While Brooke Lopez at 4,500, I'd have to say tournaments only. And even then, I'd only be saying it because it's a four game slate. The likelihood of him playing like 18 minutes is a realistic proposition pretty much every night the Lakers go out there. Unfortunately, on DraftKings for GPPs, we've got Timothy John McConnell at 43, if he plays, I like that. The future MVP at 55 in a tournament, and Bob Cove at 6,300. And for cash, you've got Ingram at 64, Benny Simmons at 10, or was that 9.9, and Joel Embiid at 10,100 as some strong cash and tournament plays over on DraftKings. The next game is the Washington Wizards and the Phoenix Suns. We'll just talk about the situation for the Phoenix Suns. Mike James, according to Woj, will be converted into a full-time contract, and they'll work out that decision of who is going to be gone sometime Thursday morning in time for this game. Otherwise, he has to go back to the G League. Now, the options are they make a trade or they waive someone. If they waive someone, in my mind, it is Derek Jones Jr. 95% chance that that's who it will be. If they trade someone, it will be one of the centers. So for you guys in seasonal leagues, don't go dropping one of the centers thinking that there's a mindset in people that they have to waive a center. No, they don't have to waive a center at all. It feels like they got too many centers and they were trying to work out a buyout for Munro or a trade. But they don't have to get rid of a center. They can just get rid of a guy who's literally not good at all. And that's Derek Jones Jr. And that would be what I would think that they would do, move on from him if they can't find an appropriate trade, which they haven't found one yet. So maybe they don't find one in the next 12 hours. So I would imagine that James is going to stay around, and that Jones Jr. will be the guy to go. And those three centers in that rotation will still continue. Speaking of that rotation, it's Alex Len's turn to sit out this game. I keep saying this every game, but if this turns out to be true, then it's even more of a joke, and I have nailed the rotation. I assume Chandler is back, and he is starting. Munro will be the backup.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
And I think Len will sit this one out. That's my guess. We will see. If it happens again, I'm sure you guys are going to tweet me, and I'm going to laugh. But that's how I think it is all going to play out for the Suns today. Tyler Ulis at 4,000. We know that Devin Booker is out for a couple of weeks with a groin strain at least. So that's that's a big hole and a big usage hole that needs to be filled with the Suns as well. Ulis played only 21 minutes in that last game. He's at 4,900. I have no faith in Jay Triano playing him minutes. It could be Mike James that comes out and plays 33, even though he's played just 20 minutes combined in the previous two games. He could easily come out and just throw us all off. As for Ulis at 49, I like it for GPPs. And then James, you can consider James a GPP option as well. But as I said, he just hasn't been playing that much. He's at 4,400, and there's no way I'd want to use that in cash. On the Wizards, it's Satoransky and Frazier. They're basically splitting minutes. 4,700 for Thomas, 43 for Frazier. Not enough upside for tournaments at that price. Not enough solidity for cash. At shooting guard, Bradley Beal was a monster in the last game, and now FanDuel's gone, right, well, that's enough of that. He is at 8,600. I do not like it. Phoenix, it's a good matchup, but that is a big, big price for Beal, and I wouldn't feel comfortable in cash, and I'm not sure the upside at that price is really necessarily high enough. You could use it, given just the way that the slate pans out, but it's not a great spot to see that price rise. Troy Daniels will get a bump with Booker out. He played 31 minutes the last game that Booker missed. He's at 3,700. We know he can go out and hit big amounts of threes and score. So I like him as a GPP option here. At small forward, the other guy who'll likely start at shooting guard will be Joshy Jackson. He's at 4,600. FanDuel's bumped his price. He hasn't been really a prolific scorer in DFS stuff. Over his last five games, he's averaging just 21 points per 36 minutes, which is a horrendous rate. At 4,600, he is worth looking at as a GPP guy, but not a strong one. Otto Porter at 7,100. I thought that, you know, he'd be able to do more with Wall out. Hasn't been the case. I will fade him. While Oubre at 5,300, great matchup for Oubre. I think this is a 35-point opportunity for him, and I like him, but only really for tournaments. At power forward, you've got Markieff Morris at 48. Do you want to buy into revenge games? Sure. The games he's played against Phoenix, 25.5-point average. 4,800, it's right where it needs to be. Not some big explosion or anything like that. It is a good matchup for Markieff, so you could throw him into a tournament, but that's probably about it. Whereas Markieff Morris 2.0, that is Marquise Chris, is at 3,700. He has been a new level of putrid lately. Yeah, in a tournament, we know he can go off, but I just don't trust the minutes whatsoever, and this isn't a scheduled Jared Dudley rest day, so Dudley will probably play more minutes than both Bender and Chris. Speaking of Bender, he's at 3,500, and that's all I need to really mention about him. At center, Greggy Monroe, 4,800, 34 points in the last game for Greg. I think he's going to be the backup center. I think he plays 20-ish minutes, won't play more than Tyson Chandler. But given this team just needs an offensive burst somehow with Devin Booker out, I like him at 4,800, and I think that he is almost a lock for 25 fantasy points and should get close to 30. Chandler at 5,300, I think he's going to get the minutes, and I think he's a lock to bring that value in as well. So I like him for cash. Well, Gortat, great matchup for Gortat, 4,800, been shit out the last couple of games, but this is an opportunity for him to put up some decent stats. So I don't mind using him at 4,800, and you won't hear me say that it's a good idea to use Marcin Gortat all that often. On DraftKings, tournament players, Satoransky at 41, a much more palatable price on DraftKings. Greggy Munro at 49, Joshy Jackson at 45, Kelly Oubre at 5,000, and Beal at 8,100. And for cash, I love TJ Warren at 6,500 on DraftKings. That's a great, great, but he's very expensive on FanDuel, so he is okay to use. I didn't mention, but he's fine to use, but he's not a 100% lock guy. Tyler Ulis at 4,400 is, I think, worth a cash look on DraftKings, and Chandler at 4,500, Tyson Chandler. I think that's a pretty good cash play as well. Let's go on to the next game now. We're going to look at the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Brooklyn Nets. The Thunder are favored by 7.5, and the total is 215.5 points. No injuries to look at heading into the game, so that's always good news. At point guard, Russell Westbrook is at 11,500. On this limited slate, I think he's a fairly strong way to spend that money. He's been putting up bigger numbers, rebounding rates up, usage rates up recently, and that's enabling him to get back to being that guy that it's a 60-point per game night. So I do like him. Here was Spencer Dinwiddie on the other side, 7,200. Not sure how high he's GPP upside is, but I feel pretty good about his floor, and that makes him a pretty decent cash play. At shooting guard, Caris LeVert, love what LeVert's been doing, 4,800. I feel like he's going to get 25 almost without doubt. That's a big statement, without doubt, but I do like what he can do running the backup point guard situation, getting those assists. And at 4,800, I like Caris LeVert a lot here, enabling you to put guys like Russ into your lineup. Abrines, Sexy Boy, Sean Kilpatrick, Andre Robertson, none of those guys really stand out to me. The blue swimmer, Alan Crabb at 4,800, he's been his usual pathetic self in terms of accumulating fantasy numbers, but at 4,800, he does enter the realm of being a GPP option. That's an $800 price drop, and then I would get interested. Damari Carroll at 58, I like that for cash. And Paulie George at 83, well, of course you can use him, but if you're going to spend up on a Thunder guy, to me, it's Russ. George has been fine. He's got 40-point upside here, 45-point upside even. I just don't feel good about his cash floor. Jumping Joe Harris, yeah, probably not. At power forward, Jeremy Grant, 37, no. Mallow at 6,900. Hasn't quite been there. It is a decent matchup for Mallow. So if you're going to use Mallow at any stage, this would be the time to use it, and more of a GPP guy. While Rondé at 7,300 is probably a little bit too high. Trev Booker, 45, no. At centre, Jarrett Allen, $4,000. 21 minutes in the last game, 28 points, blocked a ton of shots. That gives him GPP upside, but Steve Adams is a really tough matchup. He is now priced at 6,900.
Giggity!
Averaging 38 over the last three, really a lot more involved offensively. We know that big men against Brooklyn have been able to put up good numbers, but that price is pretty high. But it's not a terrible decision to use him against Brooklyn. I actually think he's a decent center play on this slate. Tyler Zeller will likely start at 3,800. He can give you cash value, give you a 20 back for that, which is fine, but the upside is significantly limited with Zeller. On DraftKings, I like Jarrett Allen at 3,400 immensely for tournaments. The Blue Swimmer at 44 and Russ at 12,000. I'd be more likely on DraftKings to use Russell in a tournament and put some cheaper guys in and hope they go off. Constructing a good cash lineup with Westbrook at 12,000 is a bit harder. For cash guys, Rondé at 5,400. That is a big, big drop in terms of what he's on in FanDuel, so I love that. Dinwiddie at 65 is strong. Steve Adams at 61 and Damari Carroll at 5,400 are both really good DraftKings options for cash games. Let's go on to the last game of the night. It's the Houston Rockets. It's the Utah Jazz. The Rockets are favored by 5.5 and the total is 208 points here. Hull Neto and Rocket Rodney Hood are both questionable for Utah. Nene is questionable for Houston and Ryan Anderson is probable after leaving the last game at halftime with back tightness. If Rocket is out, if Neto is out, that's more minutes for Burks, more minutes for Royce O'Neal, some more usage for Don Mitchell. So that would boost those guys up in that sort of a situation. Let's take a look at the point guards. Chrissy Paul's at 8,300. Paul's been good. I'm not spending that price in this sort of a matchup. Ravishing Rick Rubio down to $5,000. He has had a good record against Houston in the past when he was in Minnesota. I would be inclined to consider him a GPP guy at that price because it is very low, but his form has not been good. At shooting guard, Rockets at 5,600. If we hear that Hood is playing before lock, I think he's worth a look in a GPP. Well, Eric Gordon at 48. Nice game in the last one, but hadn't got really anywhere close to that prior. So not really feeling him. Jim Harden, 11.5. I like that for cash. I think that's strong. Well, Don Mitchell's at 7,500. Just continually crushing it. I don't know if I'm really ready to say that that's going to be a cash opportunity for Mitchell, but with the way he's playing it, it's hard to go past it. So yeah, if you want to use him for cash, go ahead. Well, Alec Burks at 5,000. I think he would be worth looking at if we see that Rocket and Neto are both out, though he did struggle in that last game. Trevor Reza at 5,000. No way for cash, but there is a little bit of tournament upside there. Well, Jinglin Joe is at 5,100. And I actually don't mind Jinglin for cash, given the way that he's been playing recently. PJ Tucker, Tarbo had a big game in the last one, Cephalosha, but I don't really expect that to, carry over. At power forward, Rhino at 41, no. Derek Favors at 6,000, absolutely no chance that I'd be interested in that. And Jonas Jerebko's at 3,800, playing well, but not enough to really make me interested. At center, Gobert, 7,600, probably some sort of minutes limit for his third game, not going to do it. Whereas Capella, if there's no minutes limit or a small minutes limit on Gobert, then Capella's going to get Gobert, and that's never a good situation. So I think both those centers are probably worth a fade, in my opinion. And if you're going to use them, I definitely wouldn't be on DraftKings, especially wouldn't be looking at using both, because I think they're going to be inversely related to each other. Let's flip it to DraftKings and have a look how it looks. I think you can use Capella or Gobert in GPPs, but again, not together. Their prices are much more reasonable on DraftKings, 65 for Capella and 62 to Gobert. So that does give them some GPP upside. For cash, it's Joe Ingles at 49. It's Harden at 11,000, which is a great price. Chrissy Paul, and I would much rather on DraftKings, Harden over Westbrook's an easy one to me. Chrissy Paul at 7,600 is an option on DraftKings too. Well, Don Mitchell at 72, I think that's worth a look in cash. Let's now flip it over to the last thing that we do, and that's look at the Yahoo guys we want to look at for tournaments. Westbrook, Harden, Oubre, the Blue Swimmer, Satoransky, Jarrett Allen, Tarbo, Chris, Troy Daniels. And for cash, there's LeVert, there's Greggy Monroe, Joe Ingles, Tyson Chandler, Josh Jackson, Tyler Ulis, Steve Adams, Brandon Ingram, Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, TJ Warren, Bradley Beal, and Joel Embiid. On Moneyball, we're going to look at tournaments for Jim Harden, Don Mitchell, Steve Adams, Oubre, Josh Jackson, Eric Gordon, future MVP, Jarrett Allen, And for cash, we've got Westbrook, we've got Embiid, Simmons, Beal, TJ, Brandon Ingram, TJ Warren, that is, Tyler Ulis, Tyson Chandler, Joe Ingles, Greggy Munro, Caris LeVert, Marcin Gortat. And we'll wrap it up by looking at draft stars. Tournaments, you've got Westbrook and Harden, who are very highly priced, Benny Simmons, Chris Paul, Paul George, Don Mitchell, Lonzo Ball, Crab, Oubre, Josh Jackson, Satoransky, Robertson, and Jarrett Allen. And for cash, we've got Embiid, Beal, TJ Warren, Spencer Dinwiddie, Hollis Jefferson, Ingram, Steve Adams, Tyler Ulis, Tyson Chandler, Larry Nance, and of course, Greg Munro.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Don't forget, guys, that you can subscribe to this podcast and leave a 5-star review on iTunes. And you can also listen on Stitcher, on Google Play, on TuneIn, and of course, now on Spotify. So when you're getting that email from Spotify saying, hey, let's look up your 2017 listening habits, and it goes through and gives you this great playlist of your most listened to songs and all this sort of stuff, which I did today, great addition. Go on, you can check out the podcast there. Go and follow us on Spotify and listen to it. Just add to the download numbers. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. And of course, Basketball Monster. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Michael Malone.